Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Learning to Mom podcast. On today's episode, I sit down with Casey, a sex educator and coach who specializes in helping individuals and couples reach their pleasure potential before, during, and after pregnancy. Today's episode will cover common obstacles couples face with sex during pregnancy and how you or someone you know can overcome them. This episode will be really beneficial for you, my friends, so let's dive in. Hello, it's Layla, your mom friend, welcoming you to this week's episode of the Learning to Mom podcast. Here, I give you the scoop on all things pregnancy and birth, and I ask experts all of your gazillion first-time mom questions, from inductions to pelvic floor to C-section recovery. Let's dive into this week's episode. Hi, Casey. Thanks so much for being here on the Learning to Mom podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to speak with you today.
Woo! Well, I know we have a lot to cover and I'm really excited. Let's be real. Like, this is kind of a topic. It doesn't get a whole lot of press. It can be a little taboo, but it's all these questions that so many of us want to know and we don't have the resources to find out our answers. So I'm thrilled. Also, to all of the listeners, Casey and I both have screaming babies in our house right now. So if you hear any of those, just it's our babies. It's probably not yours. Now, before we kind of do get into things here, would love for the listeners to get to know you better. So do you mind just kind of introducing yourself and sharing some of your backstory?
Sure. So I have been a sex educator for a very long time in some form, whether it was with teenagers, with older adults. So I started out really wanting to be a psychologist and it kind of led me down a whole different path. And I like to joke because people don't just wake up one day usually and like, I want to be a sex educator or a sex coach when I grow up, right? So what brought me here was really people that had real life questions, that had these issues coming up. So it led me down a path of going through a bunch of education, getting even a master's degree in human sexuality. And now I really specialize in talking about it during pregnancy, trying to conceive, postpartum, all of that, because again, a similar thing where who do we turn to talk to about this, except our girlfriends, or hopefully you have another mom friend. You know, that was crucial for me when I became a mom, where I was already passionate about this, but I realized, okay, we have to dive deep here and we need resources. Where are the books? Where's the podcast? Where is the information really to get this and help other people? That's part of my story and part of how I got here. Long story short, but.
Long story short, no, that was super short. And I know that we'll probably get to share, or you'll get to share a little bit more like throughout, but thank you for that intro. Now, kind of first things first, just what are the benefits of having sex during pregnancy?
Yes. So there are so many that I have a list, but I want to tell you through an interesting lens, right?
Okay.
Well, I just told you that I've been a sex educator for years. The fun fact is that I'm actually a newer sex coach. So now I'm working one-on-one with people because I really wanted that intimate touch of how do we personalize this now? And so what I did was go through Sex Coach U, which was a training through Dr. Patty Britton. She's considered the mother of sex coaching. And what she does is break it down to this really cool model called MEEBS that we use in our work. And so I thought it could be fun to discuss the benefits of sex during pregnancy, kind of through this model really quick.
Let's do it. This sounds great.
Perfect. So MEEBS stands for mind, emotions, body, energy, and spirit.
One more time.
Yes. Mind, emotions, your body, your energy, and your spirit.
Okay. MEEBS. And okay.
All of these things are impacted throughout your life in general, right? Your mental well-being,
right?
How your body feels, your body image, but even more so during pregnancy because it's such a huge transition. So Why would you want to have sex during pregnancy? For your mind, it can help you focus on one thing. I think back to when I had my daughter and I had a whole to-do list, which is probably floating around my house somewhere, right? That's like, oh, I need to prepare her nursery. I need to prepare my bag for the hospital. I need to figure out what is this thing I'm going to do with her feeding afterwards. Am I going to breastfeed? Am I going to do this, that? So sex kind of fell to the bottom of my list mentally, right? Because you have all this other space being taken up in your head. But really being in that moment, whether it's self-pleasure or sex, you get to focus on one thing. Hopefully, right? That's the goal. That's the goal. One of the problems we'll get into later is like, yeah, it's hard to do that, right? But one of the benefits can be really taking that time to quiet your mind, focus on that one thing, and also focus on something adult for a change, right? Because when you get pregnant, your mind kind of starts switching to how am I going to raise this child? We don't always think about ourselves. So
And that's so prevalent, like me being in postpartum. In postpartum, I know that's like a whole nother topic for season two, but yes, it's very prevalent in pregnancy and then even more so in postpartum, where you're just like, I don't have any energy or any thought for that. I just want to take care of this baby. Anyway, okay.
100%.
That's mind.
So you get it. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So mind. And then emotions. This is probably one of the even more important ones because sex during pregnancy or sex in general creates so many hormones in your body that it also affects how our emotions interact, right? So this happens in labor and birth too, which I think is super cool that the hormone oxytocin, which we think of as a love or a bonding hormone, is released in our bodies during sex. And it's also something that helps you birth your baby. So sex during pregnancy, in that case, for emotions, can increase the oxytocin, the bonding hormone in your body, which therefore can then boost your mood. It decreases cortisol, which is the stress hormone that's released in our bodies, and it can then lower stress. All good things, right?
I wonder if that is, and I say I wonder, but I know 100% this it has to be this way. That's so like American culture. I highly doubt that the French view sex during pregnancy is negative. So that's just probably so like American and not what the rest of the world even thinks.
You know what? That's an interesting perspective. I'm sure it varies worldwide, right? But I have met another sex coach who told me they were like, yeah, there is this other coach in another country, and forgive me for forgetting it right now, somewhere in Europe, that actually specializes in this as well. So while I think there are factors that make it more taboo in America, and we just in general hate our bodies more and have all these reasons for, struggling in different ways, I think across the board there is some still some struggle.
No, for sure. Okay, let's go back. I'm trying to remember like exactly where we were left off. It was about the negative kind of connotations with pregnancy and how, there's just a lot of negativity instead of focusing on the positives. It's like this is uncomfortable and all that jazz.
Yeah, so I was just discussing about how we typically have this negative idea of sex during pregnancy, but there's really so many positives, whether it's for your mind, for your emotions, for your body, helping you prepare for labor. You can incorporate perineal massage to lower risk of tearing. You can prepare for postpartum recovery. And the last two of the MEEPS model being energy to encourage your relaxation, sex to improve your sleep, increase your energy with your spirit. You're connecting with yourself and a partner. And you can even incorporate rituals into that. So I think it's just a beautiful way to kind of give this vision of what things could be. Whereas we, when we are in the moment, when we're in the moment, just keeping it real, I remember being pregnant and throwing up and having all these body issues, right? And I'm like, to my husband, if you even think about touching me right now, I will lose it, right? So,
Yes.
yeah.
I remember, like, I almost had an aversion to my partner in, like, the first, you know, there was, like, I had this strong aversion to chicken. And then it was also, like, first trimester, I was, like, I don't know. But I've heard other women have that. That is a thing.
For
Maybe
sure.
it's, like, we're just so uncomfortable and we associate, like, them with the puking. So it's just, like, bad association. But luckily and thankfully, that was only, like, the first trimester when things are really rough.
Yeah, unfortunately, my sickness lasted longer than first trimester. So I did have that throughout. But third trimester, where people usually say is the most uncomfortable, for me, that was heaven. I was in my element. I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling turned on now. I'm feeling comfy. Like, I can deal with kind of some of the other stuff, but that nausea, that took me out. So
okay, so then that was energy, and then lastly is spirit, right?
Lastly, the spirit. So connecting with yourself, your partner, and incorporating rituals. Do affirmations about what you want your pregnancy to be like, what do you want your birth to be like, kind of visualizing these positive elements, and it can really bring some positivity into, you know, your day-to-day. It can bring just pleasure in other ways. And I like to think about it in that lens, because a lot of times we're thinking about sex, we're like, oh, penis and vagina, you know, bang, bang, done, man, orgasms. And then we're like, okay, cool. You know, there's other ways that we can prioritize our pleasure that really means something to us, rather than always focusing on that partner, especially when you're going through a time like pregnancy, and it's such a critical time
yeah.
in transition.
Well, I thank you for walking me through Meebs. That was great. And I loved, like, what a great spin that you kind of had on that question. I feel like this was just so funny, like, hearing, this is my first time. I mean, besides our first, like, our intro conversation, Casey, but really sitting down with a sex coach. And so what's in my mind, I wonder if this is, like, something that you get, as I just keep thinking of the scene in, I think, is it, like, Meet the Fockers? Have you ever
yes.
seen that? Where it's,
I
like, his
love
mom.
That movie.
Right? Am I thinking of this? It's the right? Where the mom is a sex coach or sex therapist. And they, like, spend the night in a room, and it's just, like, all this sex stuff. And this woman is, like, hilariously crazy. But that's my perception.
No, I love that movie. I had the same perception when I watched it. And yeah, at that time, I did not have this anticipation that one day I would be a sex coach.
No,
It just was
that's
not
gonna
a
be
thing.
me. That's gonna be me. No.
Yeah. Right.
That's so
I'm like,
great.
Yes, I want her life. No.
Okay, so the next question that I had for you, what are some of the most common obstacles that you see couples trying to overcome regarding sex during pregnancy?
Yeah, so we mentioned a couple as we were talking about the positives, because it's like, okay, some people might be listening and be like, okay, this sounds way too positive right now. You know, that's not me. And I really want this to be realistic for folks. So
yeah,
some of the obstacles can be just, for one, the huge life change in transition, right? For somebody who might, whether you're a first-time mom, or, you know, it's you know, you've been pregnant before and this is another pregnancy. Either way, you're going through all of the changes to your mind, your body, everything changes. For those who have a great pregnancy, even, you know, there are still things you have to do. You have to go to doctor's appointments, perhaps. You have to plan. There is still some level of your time being taken. So really what happens is sex becomes less of a priority.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, right? Some partners see differences in desire. So one partner, whether it's the person who's pregnant or the partner, one either wants sex more or less than the other, or not at all.
Yeah.
There's a disruption in routine. So some things that used to work for you, if you're like, oh yeah, we used to have sex every night Before we went to bed, but that's when I find myself throwing up as I brush my teeth. Like, it might be different. Things might look different for you than they did before. Some people are navigating pain, discomfort. Maybe the person who's pregnant wants less sex because they don't feel well, not feeling sexy, tired, body image, prioritizing baby. The partner who's not pregnant can also go through changes. And even for myself, it's hard sometimes when you're the person who is pregnant to think outside of that moment because you're like, look, I need all the support right now. And 100%, I agree with that as a coach, as a mom. And I want us to also think about what the partners might be going through without minimizing that, right? Because some
That's true.
partners become scared. They're like, this is different for me. There's a baby in you. There's a whole thing, which I know we don't have time to get into right now, but the Madonna whore complex of looking at women as either a mother figure or a whore is,
Ooh.
the.
Dang, now I wish we had time to get into that. Dang.
That
Ooh,
that's
yeah.
really the basis of it. It is just how society places expectations on women and mothers. And you are either sexy or you're a mom, or like expected to be this housewife. You know what I mean? Like you're supposed to
No,
be
yes, I
barefoot
know what
and
you mean.
pregnant, and
Yes.
you lose that previous self. And that's not, if that's happening with you and your partner, that's not a thing that is just them, or it's not just men or just a man. It's really the societal expectations of that. So
100%.
bringing all of that together, and then you're like, well, am I in the mood? Am I not in the mood? What positions feel good now? Because now you have maybe, third trimester, your belly's bigger and things don't feel like they used to. Those are all the things, and probably a lot more, that are obstacles for
Yeah.
people.
All right. Let me tell you a little story. After Milo was born, I was pretty much completely overwhelmed. Between managing her dairy allergy and trying to recover myself, I was lost, stressed out, and just on the verge of breakdown about every day, honestly, which is why I really wish that I could have had Nourish meal delivery set up to help my postpartum recovery. Their meals are organic, they're gluten-free, allergen-free, and soy oil-free. They even use electrolyzed ionized water to wash their ingredients, ensuring top-notch quality. They also deliver nationwide in biodegradable containers. We love it. Nourish isn't just a meal service, but your biggest help in postpartum. I'm telling you, it's going to be a game changer for you. You don't have to worry about what you're going to eat or how you're going to find time to make it or even how the heck can I stand when I'm so much in pain to make a meal. It's just an answered prayer, truly. Their meals are delivered straight to your door. Check them out by going to nourishmealdelivery.com. The link is in the episode show notes below. So on that, what you at the end there, kind of talking about positions and like safety, let's just talk about that. Like, let's talk about the fear that many people have, first and foremost, is sex safe for the baby?
Sex overall is safe for the baby, and it's overall safe for all partners involved, right? The only exceptions are if you've had any signs of preterm labor, you have a history of having a preemie, you experience bleeding, cramping, any unusual discharge, if your water's broken or you're leaking amniotic fluid, you've been diagnosed with something called placenta previa, where the placenta is covering the opening to the cervix. Those are all things that you want to ask your medical provider about.
Okay.
And in general, I say, even if you have none of that, because you might listen to this and you might remember, one of those things or not everything. So what you can do in general is just speak to your medical provider, in whether you have a healthy pregnancy or a high-risk pregnancy, whatever it is, just ask them. Hey, I'm thinking about having sex or intercourse with my partner. Is that safe for me? And that way you know and can discuss right there and then what are some
Yeah.
things that I can be concerned about.
So then on that, what are safe positions?
Yeah, I would say any position is really safe. It's more so what is comfortable for you,
Okay.
right? So I remember speaking to my friend, and we were both pregnant at the same time. And we would text each other because we talk about this stuff. And I'd be like, hey, girl, like, what positions are working for you right now? Because I tried, like, last week I tried missionary, and like I was on bottom and he was on top, and it felt good. But then this week I'm like, I feel cramped. I feel claustrophobic. Like, get off of me. I had this, again, you said an aversion to your partner. I was like, I want to be as far away, but as close as possible. If that makes any sense
It
in the
does. For those of us that
moment.
have experienced pregnancy, it makes sense. We
Right,
know.
and I'm like, so how do I do that? So then, some other positions are you can get on top, and that can work really across the board in trimesters, and partner can be on bottom. The issue there is you can also get out of breath in pregnancy, right? Like we said, it's exercise, it's a workout. You
You're
wouldn't
winded after a
know,
flight of
like,
stairs.
yeah, you're really getting that workout in when you're on top. So while your belly might be free, your breasts might be free for play and or no touch at all, you feel more in control of the depth, the penetration and everything. For some that might be a little too much. So then the partner on the bottom could maybe stroke from beneath. That could help you out, right? I say use pillows.
Okay.
So one thing you could do is if you're laying on your side, that's a comfortable position for a lot of people, with the partner coming from behind you, because that way you can kind of use your pregnancy pillow to hug and wrap around and be comfy. You could even get a back massage like that, right? And still have your space, and things are all good, and you can get some rest. And also, doggy style. When you're doing doggy style, you can also put pillows in strategic places like under your belly or your chest so that you're not putting all of your weight on one place or another. And there's so many more, right? So many positions.
But
There's
those are like good
modifications.
go-tos.
Yeah, there's modifications for everything. Just do what works for you, what's comfortable, pillows, lube, talk to your partner. Communication is really the key thing of, you want to know what feels good for both of you.
And I think that's probably an obstacle back to our previous question
Yes.
on like you have to fig kind of not only figuring out what works for you now, but also to your point of like next week it could be completely different. So it's kind of like the constant almost figuring out, which can be exhausting and kind of hard to overcome. And it's like, well, I don't even want to deal with that because it might be uncomfortable, or it might take us a bit just to get in the mood because of figuring it out. Figuring it out isn't always like super sexy,
100%. It's not.
So let's see here. I think we talked a little bit about this, but I do want to ask it. What are the biggest misconceptions around sex during pregnancy?
Well, I think some of the misconceptions about sex during pregnancy are one that's going to hurt the baby. It's not. There's a layer, I want to say, but there are a bunch of layers between whatever is going into the vagina, whether that's fingers, a penis, and where the baby is. There's the cervix blocking it, there's a mucus plug blocking it, there's the amniotic sac, there's a uterus. Like, if you want to talk technically, there's no way anything is going to touch the baby or harm the baby unless there's some contradiction to it. So that's one misconception. Another misconception is that, again, that sex is all bad during pregnancy. For some people, they actually have increased desire for sex. They also have, more orgasms, or you might be more aroused. You have more blood flow to the vulva area and breasts. Some people like their breasts more during pregnancy, while others hate it. So it's really not one size fits all.
So Casey, we did talk about this earlier, but I guess we didn't dive into like the advice or recommendations you would have regarding this. So, what advice would you have for couples who have unequal libidos during pregnancy?
I think that's a super important question. One, because that's probably the most common barrier that couples come to me have, right? And that's pregnant or not, actually. The advice I would give is one, communication. You have to accept first and be willing to talk about it. Because a lot of times we get into these spaces where we feel shame or we feel guilt about it. And we're like, well, you know, I should feel like I want to please my partner, or I should feel like having sex more, or I used to, right? We have all of these reasons and things we tell ourselves that really kind of add to the problem, right? Or if you're the person that wants sex more, you're like, you're putting those shoulds on your partner, right? Like, oh, well, you know, like to have a healthy relationship, we have to do it. And you're like, well, you know, what I would say is this is a transitional time in life. It's not always going to be like this, right? Pregnancy is 9 to 10 months, or sometimes shorter for folks. You know, it's a stage and a moment in time. So you really need to prioritize communication. You need to accept, what is it right now? Are we having zero sex? Are we having a lot of sex? Are we having sex one time a week? You know, how does that feel for you? And really then going to your partner about it and saying, this is the amount of sex that I would like to have. How does that sound for you? And how much sex do you want to have? It's really like boring, easy stuff.
Yeah.
That it's not as exciting, right? But it's really that foundation of, do I trust you? Can I talk to you about this? And how are we going to come to a compromise? And if we can't, then what do we do? Right?
Yeah.
But talking it out, and you can also schedule sex even during pregnancy. And I know that people, when I say this, people are like, that is so boring. I don't want to schedule sex. It takes out the spontaneity of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, no, you don't put it on your calendar. Like, I'm going to do it on Friday at 7 PM. It doesn't have to be like that. It's like, okay, if we agree that right now we want to try, you know, having sex at bedtime, for example, or when we wake up, or when we're able to get in the shower, you know, together, that's a time that there's an opportunity for sex to happen, then you create more of those opportunities. And that doesn't mean that you go through with it, even if you don't want to. That's the key piece of, there's still consent. There's still respect, there's still communication, there's still spontaneity, because you don't know if it's going to happen tonight or tomorrow, right?
That's
but
true.
At least you have a time that you both have in mind that it could happen. And actually, research shows that if you set a time aside for at least one day a week, that you're going to have more sex doing the scheduling that way than you would if you have just, we'll figure it out.
Huh. Just one day a week. It makes that big of a difference. I would assume it would be like a lot higher than one.
No.
Because then, no, I like, but I understand, like, yeah, how easy it is to get out of the rhythm, and then you're having zero a week.
Exactly. And what people always think other people are having sex more than they are. Right?
Yeah.
You're like, they've got to be doing it like three times a day, every day of the week. And I'm here like maybe once a month. And they're like, what? You know, once a month, I could never do that. And then you have the people doing it every, you know, everyone has such a different opinion that we have to get out of our heads and just into the moment. Like, whatever you're doing is right for you and your partner.
Yeah.
Period.
We had it scheduled, not of like the specific days, but it was so many times during a week and so many times during the weekend. And I think we really, that like worked well for us, because it wasn't like, you know, every Tuesday and Thursday, but it was like looking at the week, and you still had that spontaneity, but it was still like, we were still kind of had a goal in mind. And then, you know, it was just better time to connect. Obviously, I think of it as like emotional. So I just, all that jazz. But anyway, another tip. So
I love
let's
that.
See.
Can I add one quick thing
on? Yeah, please.
Okay. So I really love what you just said about scheduling, you know, not a specific day, but the time. And research shows you're on the right track. And it made me think of this idea of date night, right? And actually, you're sparking, because last night my husband and I went out on a date night. No, no sex involved. It wasn't that exciting, but, you know, But we got to connect with each other. And date nights are a great time to have these conversations, right? Or even dinners, or when you get alone time with your partner. And also, think back to pre-pregnancy, right? Date nights were a time where, or I think back to my own relationship, I'll give as an example. We didn't live together. Date nights for us were times where we would take time getting a shower. I would shave my legs. I would put on a cute outfit, right? I would do my hair, and you go out to have dinner or have a good time. And then afterwards, then, there's this opportunity for sex there where you're both kind of planning it in your mind that it might happen, but we don't do that anymore because we live together. Now we have a kid, right?
Yeah.
But you can bring that back. Like, if you have the availability to get a babysitter or get that time to do a date night, that can bring some spice back into it. Or what I love even more, because sometimes with date night, there's so much pressure on it that it doesn't become fun. Like, we're arguing for about an hour to even figure out where to go, and then, all this stuff. But date night in. What about doing a date night in and really
Yeah.
prioritizing that time of, well, maybe we watch part of a show tonight, or maybe we order food in, or maybe we go to Five Below and get like a paint set and we do a canvas and
Oh, I
wine
love that.
date night in, So you create opportunities to connect, and then you're
Yeah.
more willing to kind of go down a path of intimacy, whether it's intercourse or a massage or touching or a hug or a kiss, you're more connected that way.
Yeah. I've heard too, like related to get libidos and everything, but like for women. Now I'm just speaking. Obviously, there are times when women have higher libidos. I was doing some research because that was not my case in pregnancy. I went the other way. But women, we need like it's little like turning up the heat. So it's harder for us to just be like, oh, it's bedtime. Yeah, honey, I'm in the mood. But it's like all day long. You know, did he help cook dinner, or did he hold my hand? Did he compliment me? Did he give me a kiss on the forehead? So Matthew and I have this thing where he'll be like, "What's your temperature at?" And there's like a temperature, like blushing to all the listeners. I may have to edit this out. We'll see. Of there's like a temperature, you know, oven preheat. Let's just say it's, you know, 400 degrees, and that's when it's like, ooh, we're in the mood. We're in the mood, right? And so, like, sometimes throughout the day, you know, I'll be like, so where are you at? And I'm like, 200. All right, man, I'm having so much fun. Not even like, I guess, getting off on these little rabbit trails. This is amazing.
If you're still working on putting together your baby registry, then listen up. I have recently been introduced and I have fallen in love with Bisbee Baby. In short, Bisbee Baby is a portable bottle warmer. It warms breast milk and formula 2 times faster than any bottle warmer in the world. Do I wish that I had this during my 15-month breastfeeding journey? Well, actually, more like, man, does my husband wish we had this? Because essentially, Milo only took a bottle when I was gone, but my husband was basically stuck at home whenever I went anywhere in case Milo needed to be fed and he needed to be close to our hot water to warm up the breast milk. This is why Bisbee Baby is a game changer. They can warm up any formula, even the thicker ones, and they can even warm up frozen milk bags when you're in a pinch. It kind of looks like a little thermos, like that you take to the office, but you just stick it in your diaper bag and you're good to go. They come in 3 color options: black, white and gold, and white and mint. I have the white and gold one, and I think it's really cute. Go to bisbeebaby.com to check them out. And because you're a listener of the Learning to Mom podcast, use MOM10 for 10% off. The link is in the episode show notes for your convenience.
Okay, now kind of not necessarily even related to pregnancy, but more related to your role and who you see. What are some signs that someone may see it in their relationship that tells them like, oh, we should go see a sex therapist?
I'm so glad you asked this, and this is a great time to even clarify, right? So there's definitely signs when you want to go see a sex therapist, and those would be if you're having some emotional blockage, or let's say you're communicating and you're doing all of these tips together, right? And you're arguing about it and you're like, oh, we can't come to a resolution on our own. You know, this is difficult, or it's been like this for months, or it's been like this for weeks and we don't know what to do. That's one sign to talk to somebody, right? But another thing is you don't have to wait for red flags to pop up.
Yeah.
And I say that because, you know, I want to talk to people. Typically, I talk to people who might be in a crisis or like have a concern, like right now, like we're not having sex. How do I connect with them? But sometimes when I speak to couples like that, it can be too late for coaching. And this is what I want to say, is that there's actually a difference between coaching and sex therapy even.
Okay.
Right? So the couples that I see for coaching are people who would benefit from sex therapy as well, but who are in a space where they're not working through significant emotional trauma. Right.
Yeah.
So there's like one red flag where you're like, oh, I need to see a sex therapist, not a coach.
Yeah.
And if you're unsure, just reach out to somebody, because hopefully, you know, or reach out to me, because as a professional, that is part of our role, is referring out when we don't cover that topic. For example, trauma is something somebody would see a therapist for. More significant issues with, it could be a medical issue that somebody's going through. If they really are experiencing distress from that, or if it's something more mental health related, let's say anxiety, depression, which can be common in general population, but also during pregnancy and postpartum, right? We hear about postpartum depression, but we don't always talk about the other, in my field, we call them PMADs, or perinatal mood disorders, which could be anxiety or obsessive compulsive disorder or psychosis even, right? Thoughts of wanting to harm yourself or others. Those are all signs that you really need a trained mental health specialist, like a therapist. And if it's not one of those things, then coaching really stresses communication, really goes over that MEBS model we talked about in the beginning. It's, think of it as a personalized sex education for you or your partner or both. Right? It's, what are those resources? What can we do? What are the exercises? It's kind of fun. And I get to be that person's teammate. Whereas in therapy, they're both great, both good, just different models.
Yeah.
In therapy, there's more of a hierarchy where the therapist is more the authority figure, and the person seeing the therapist is more so in a lesser position of power in some ways.
Yeah.
Whereas in coaching, the goal is to be equals and kind of like, okay, so how are we going to meet your goal? Like, how can
That's
I
cool.
support you to get there? And that's what I really love, and probably the simplest way to explain the differences between that. But do not wait for there to be an issue. You can see a coach. One thing I love, love, love about coaching that is different from previous work I've done in mental health is that we don't focus so much on dysfunction, right? We don't focus so much on, oh, here's the issue, like here's about my childhood, here's what's wrong, like,
yeah,
well, here's the trauma I went through, and this is why the way I am, all important stuff to work through. But in coaching, we focus on a solution or pleasure or what is going to bring you to your highest potential here, right? And I love working in that space, because you can bring so much more joy to your life even if you don't have a problem. It might even be simple. Like, a lot, we're talking about deep stuff here, but it could be, well, I want to try a new sex toy, or I want to try a new lube. Like, how do I even start? What, there's so much on the internet. Instead of just Googling, go to a sex coach. You could ask them, like, here's my goal. I want to have more orgasms. Like, you know, how do I do that?
Yeah.
And then with all of that other stuff in mind of, okay, pregnancy, body changes, everything we said, a sex coach would take that into consideration and make that specific suggestion for that person.
Okay, I love it. All right. Now, before we wrap up here, there are a few questions that I want to cover regarding postpartum, just for any women that perhaps may be approaching that, you know, very quickly. So, regarding postpartum sex, when is it safe to return to sex postpartum?
Yes. So I would ask the question of what kind of sex are we talking about, right?
Oh, because, yeah.
Yeah, because I think, again, we kind of put sex into this one word.
No,
it
yeah,
could mean
100%.
So many different things. So for this example, I'll just say we're talking about vaginal intercourse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or penetration of some kind.
Yeah.
Boy, fingers. Typically, the recommendation postpartum is 6 weeks after giving birth. Now, let me tell you again, because I'm a realist, like I do not like just saying research, just saying facts. When I was 6 weeks postpartum, I was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Terrified.
Oh, there was nothing getting in there
okay?
at 6 weeks.
Mm-mm. Of anything. Like, I didn't want to touch. I didn't want to look at it. Like, even myself. So there was no way that I wanted my partner anywhere near, you know, the vaginal area.
6 weeks comes fast.
Anal area, whatever. Fast, right? And you're like, there's no way. And I remember being scared of even going to schedule a 6 week checkup appointment, which is so important for many reasons. Not just sex. Like, and, you know, we hear
but
this,
you know that they're going to check you out and you're like, I don't even want them down there. Yeah.
Exactly,
no, 100%.
Right. So for some people, the reason that that is a standard, and some people actually do return to intercourse sooner than that. And if that's what's right for you, I don't want to shame anybody, right? Like, somebody might feel ready physically, emotionally. Everybody's birth story is different.
So true.
So somebody might have had a traumatic birth that adds another component onto it. Some people might have stitches where others didn't tear at all, right? It was uncomplicated
so
birth. Somebody might have a C-section. So really, that's why returning to a medical provider is part of your plan. It's not just coaching. It's not just therapy. It's also this medical component. And also, what are you ready for, right? I think that's probably the most important question I would ask is, when are you mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually ready to return to whatever form of intimacy or sex it is? Part of it is so wild of a ride that there was a turning point for me where I was like, wow, I actually feel more in love with my partner. I actually feel more connected with my partner. And that's not true for everyone. I say that humbly, like with a grain of salt, because I want that to be true for everyone. But it made me realize that it's not all bad. It doesn't have to be all bad, right? Like, there can be this really intimate and vulnerable space for partners to share with each other. And as a coach, that's kind of what I want to support. How do we get you in that space? How do we get you a supportive partner? How do we get them to understand what you need? How do you understand your own needs postpartum? Because hormones are everywhere, like your body's everywhere, right? You're healing. So that ease back into whatever sex and intimacy is for you has to be so individualized, and it has to be done with so much care. That if I feel like if you have a bad experience, that it's going to make you more hesitant to continue to try. And then we're talking about, you know, more problem solving, which can be done. It has to be done, right? Or it doesn't have to be, but it can impact a relationship so significantly that we want to address it before.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, now on the theme of addressing things before, in this postpartum phase here, what are some common obstacles that you see that are specific to postpartum? That way women who are pregnant could maybe, I guess, get some insight on like, oh, that might be coming down the pipe. Like, perhaps me and my partner can start talking about that now, or I can just start thinking about that, so that way we're a little bit more prepared.
Absolutely. So important. What I want people to think about is postpartum, you might be tired. Having a newborn is serious work, serious sleep deprivation. There's going to be differences in desire, perhaps, that we talked about, similar in pregnancy, feeling like there isn't time for sex, feeling pressured to have sex before you're ready. Fear of having sex with a baby in the room, right? Like, what is the sleeping situation? Are you co-sleeping? That's Are they in a bassinet? Are they in their own crib? Like, what's going on? That's going to be different for everybody. Body image concerns. You might not feel like yourself. I know I was like, whose body is this, right? Like, I couldn't do a sit-up. I couldn't, you know, you could barely get out of bed. You look different. You feel different. You have all types of postpartum, possibly bleeding, and, you know, things to take care of, which look into that more before you give birth if you're a first time mom or parent, because the aftercare can be real. Some people might be going through birth trauma, perinatal mood disorders, which we mentioned, depression, anxiety, OCD, psychosis. There is support for that. I can give you the link. One organization's PSI, Postpartum Support International. They have tons of support groups. And that way, no matter where you are, at least if you're in the United States listening, that's a great online resource to have. You might have been somebody who experienced a pregnancy or infant loss, right? Getting serious for a second.
Yeah.
Not all birth stories are happy ones, unfortunately. There's also people that may have experienced racism in their birthing experience, or for Black women, especially giving birth in the United States, or Indigenous women, the rates of maternal mortality are so much higher than white women and everybody else that that's something that comes into play. Like, we don't think about all this, right? And it's kind of heavy to think about it, but pleasure and sex and intimacy is impacted by all of this, right? So not to scare anybody, I never want to go into it again thinking about the dysfunction or thinking about the fear of things that could happen. More so saying it as an awareness to think about, what would your plan be?
Yeah.
If this were to happen to you, or if this is your scenario, if you have significant health issues going on, who are your support people? Is your partner a good person to turn to? Is it a friend? Is it your medical professional? Do you have a doula, maybe? Doulas are awesome. I love doulas. Maybe somebody has a midwife that they really trust. It could be a grandmother. It could be an aunt. You know, it could be a family member. And going back to what you said in the beginning about the United States kind of giving so much more pressure on, like, sex and pregnancy not being a thing, I think in our culture, largely, we've also moved away from that family model, right? Where people had support. A lot of us live away from family. There's no such thing as, like, grandmom being there to cook your meals and help you heal postpartum. Like, you might be by 100%. Yourself. So how are you building your support network now? And all of that is going to make a difference when it comes to postpartum sex too, because if you have to think about all of those things, you're not thinking about sex. Like, that's going to fall to the bottom, right? So that's how you can support it now, is building that support, making a plan, and really making sure you're going to have time to take care of yourself and be able to connect with your partner.
Okay. Dang. So good. Well, Casey, this was incredible. So I got to ask, how can people find you?
The best way to find me is my website or email. So the website is sexcoachkacy.com. You can spell it Casey, K-A-C-I. My email is the same. So sexcoachkacy@gmail.com. Or you can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at sexcoachkacy, K-A-C-I.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Learning to Mom podcast. I really hope that it served you. This was an episode that I really wish I could have heard during my pregnancy, so I hope that you enjoyed it. Catch me here next week, and I'll talk to you then.